On the white throat of the useless passion that scorched my soul with its burning breath, I clutched my fingers in murderous fashion and gathered them close in a grip of death. For why should I fan or feed with fuel a love that showed me but blank despair? So my hold was firm and my grasp was cruel. I meant to strangle it then and there. I thought it was dead, but with no warning it rose from its grave last night and came and stood by my bed till the early morning, and over it spoke your name. Its throat was red where my hands had held it. It burned my brow with its scorching breath, and I said the moment my eyes beheld it, a love like this can know no death. For just one kiss that your lips have given in the lost and beautiful past to me, I would gladly barter my hopes of heaven and all the bliss of eternity. For never a joy are the angels keeping to lay at my feet in paradise, like that of into your strong arms creeping and looking into your love-lit eyes. I know in the way that sins are reckoned, this thought is a sin of the deepest dye. But I know too, if an angel beckoned, standing close by the throne on high, and you adown by the gates infernal, should open your loving arms and smile, I would turn my back on things supernal, to lie on your breast a little while. To know for an hour you were mine completely, mine in body and soul, my own. I would bear unending torture sweetly, with not a murmur and not a moan. A lighter sin or a lesser error might change through hope or fear divine, but there is no fear, and hell has no terror, to change or alter a love like mine. Ad Finem by Ella Wheeler Wilcox. Welcome back to another episode of the We and Me podcast. Today we are going to be doing another We Reads episode. This post is from June of 2016, so this is definitely a much older one, 3 years in fact. This is from when we were writing for Defying Shadows, a website hosted by Nicole Housen, for those who may be unfamiliar with it, but you can check them out at defyingshadows.com. This post was something that we had written in response to Father's Day. So the way that it works for Defying Shadows authors is that you get various topics from month to month. You get specific things in advance that they'd like you to write about. For us, we had chosen to write about fathers and Father's Day. For those who are unaware of this post, I just want to put a trigger warning on it because familial relations are discussed here, but specific abuse is not. So here we go. The Absent Present Father. Hero. Superman. Friend. These are words people use to describe their fathers. Of course, we can't forget deadbeat, absent, and evil bastard. But what are you supposed to do when dear old dad fits none of these? He doesn't fall into either extreme. He couldn't commit to any of these types of people because he would then need to deal with the problems and guilt that went along with his choices. There are two kinds of people in the world, the blank and the blank. The weak and the strong, the intelligent and the wrong, good and evil, the list goes on, etc., etc., etc. Whatever point he was trying to make would then be filled in. In those conversations, logically speaking, his points were always clear, but ever-changing. A decade later, he began to keep count and realize there are literally hundreds of types of people, if not more. Life is not black and white always, but a diverse struggle and labyrinth you're meant to navigate. Now you realize it is your maze to get through alone. You were told he's someone you could depend on, or not. He's the head of the household because he's the man, but for you, well, for you he was a person in your life. He was there, but not present, and never when you needed him to be your protector or Superman. Oh sure, sometimes he was there for you, but you could never tell him anything real or depend on consistency. You had tried, but he wouldn't listen or believe you, because then he would need to deal with what problem or problems were occurring, breaking his delusion of the perfect family life. My question to you is now what? What do you do now? We have never felt support from my father as far as my mental health is concerned. Yes, he is my dad. Yes, he worked hard to provide a comfortable life for my siblings, mother, and myself. I'm fine, though, and just need to decide to be happy. It is a decision, is it not? I'm just lazy and wanting to be miserable. I enjoy being sick. Depression? It's a state of mind. Anxiety? Is a state of mind. Everything else? Yep, you guessed it. A state of mind. I need to choose to be happy. And if I can't, then just pretend, because I'm prettier with a smile plastered on my face. Well, dear father, you must be right. Do you feel better now? Why didn't I ever think of that? How stupid I have been to not realize that plastering a smile across my worn face made others more comfortable. But me? Well, I don't matter much as long as everyone else is happy. I no longer speak to my father about things that really should and do matter. He will never know of my problems because he was there for the beginning of many of them and just told me to be happy or talk to my mother. He loved her first, after all. We believed once he was our protector, teacher, and friend, but that was decades ago. He sees only what he wants things to be, and for that I have no tolerance any longer. It is who he is, and that's fine. There is nothing I can do about it. Praying away a problem is good and well if you actually get some additional help when needed, and don't just lay a few hands on someone repeating a nonsensical mantra. But again, that's who some people are. The psychologist I see twice a week is just my friend. My lifelong blackouts, well, that's just in my head. Close, Dad. Close. Unfortunately, now I see that I am worth getting help. I am worth our struggle to wellness, both of body and mind. You are not a deadbeat. Far from it. You did your very best. I truly do believe that. But it meant nothing to me when I needed you. You're there for me and my husband these last couple years, but I won't bother you with my problems again. I learned long ago that all you need is surface information and a fake smile. So now that is what you can have. I gave up because you never did things you promised. You called yourself my, our protector and Superman. But you were there, and not even a Clark Kent. You taught me many things. I was instructed on love and hate and logical things. More importantly, you taught me what not to be, what family should be, but rarely is, and to find answers for myself. There are two kinds of people in this world, fathers and those who desire to be called father. Thanks, Dad. As always, I leave you with this. It is okay to take care of yourself. It is not easy, selfish, or weak. My intent is not to be preachy, but I wish for those struggling to find comfort and healing. These words typed up mean nothing if not read. But make no mistake, I am here living, healing, learning, and I am a friend. For those of you, again, who are interested, that was from defyingshadows.com. It was a guest post that we had done when we were more of a regular writer for that site. We will be reading other posts from Defying Shadows in the future. So if you're interested, you can look forward to those episodes in the coming months. Now I want to talk a little bit about that post. First of all, I myself didn't actually write that one. Defying Shadows was something that some of my parts had found years ago when we were a bit earlier in therapy. Like I said, that post was published a little over 3 years ago now, which means that we wrote it probably 3 years and a month or so ago. And I point that out because for me, time frames are important, so I just want people to be aware of them. Now, that being said, things are actually a bit different within my family tree now. One thing that did change was my dad had actually found our blog. It was interesting, but he didn't actually talk to me about it, just to be clear, which is why I understand some of my part's anger and frustration with him. One thing that he did do, however, was speak to my younger sister about it, and then kind of utilized his go-to and what he always had done over the years, was dismiss things that were actually occurring because then he would have to deal with them. It's amusing to me that one of his favorite movies is The Burbs with Tom Hanks, for those of you who haven't seen it. For those of you who have, you'll understand what I'm talking about. If I can find a video clip of this specific scene, then I'll post it in a link below via YouTube, most likely. But there's this particular scene where one of the neighborhood kids in this movie, he's a teenager, I believe, maybe early 20s, I can't quite remember. But he's discussing some of the different people in this neighborhood. It's a very weird movie, just to throw that out there for everybody who isn't familiar. But basically, there's these neighbors, and they're very weird. And the rest of the neighborhood is curious as to what it is that they're doing and when they come and go, because nobody ever sees them except for at night. It's like a horror comedy kind of movie, because, you know, Tom Hanks, just so you know. But with this movie, there's a scene where this teenager in the neighborhood is discussing some of the other neighbors. And Tom Hanks's character, he expresses that this character isn't going to admit to anything that could be weird going on because then he would have to deal with it. That has always stuck with us because for us, that is how we very much view my father. I know some of my parts are angry with him. I know some of them definitely love him and, you know, care for him and respect him and would help him with anything that they possibly could. I fall somewhere in the middle of that because I'm just not attached to him. I don't have a lot of memories of him, to be perfectly blunt. But one thing we did want to discuss, because, you know, Father's Day, is that things do and can change if you work through things. And some of the things that have changed is that we do talk to him some. We truly don't talk to him about things that are really important, but I have shared some of what it is that I do after he had found my blog. For example, he got us the microphone and some of the equipment that we needed to start this podcast. They got it, he and my mother, they got it for us for my birthday. It was a nice, thoughtful birthday gift, and to my knowledge, they've never listened to an episode, which is not their doing. It was a choice of ours not to share it with them. They do ask from time to time, and that's not true. My dad doesn't, but my mother does ask from time to time how the radio, or however she puts it, she doesn't fully understand what a podcast is. And then to further explain that for some of you who follow us on Twitter, at the We and Me, you may have seen that we had been tweeting a while back with Daniel Carcillo, Carbomb, previously of the Chicago Blackhawks. He is someone who discusses a lot about TBI, traumatic brain injury. And several years ago now, my mother and father were in a very bad car accident, and my mother was completely altered. No pun intended, because she has a traumatic brain injury. So that was another reason why we wanted to have Carbomb Daniel on the podcast. But back to the main point of this episode is that things do change within family dynamics if you're interested in doing so. And for me, I don't particularly have much interest in it. We do, however, go back and forth with these things because I do have some parts who love my parents and then my dad and all of the different complications therein. Now, to be perfectly clear, my father was not one of our abusers. He was just the absent present father, which is why the title of that article fits so well and still does, because as some of you know, I did have a younger brother and I do have a younger sister still. None of them live at home. My younger brother is now deceased. There's a whole lot of pain and anger there. And I bring this up despite any relative of mine ever finding my podcast hating these types of particular things, because one of the main things within our family tree is it's nobody else's business. Well, I think that's very damaging, and that's just my belief. So if you don't want someone to know something about you because you're ashamed of it or you feel guilty, don't do it. And that is true for us as well. I have parts that feel guilty about some of the things that they've done over the years. Nothing that pertains to this particular topic at hand. But if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you've heard those things. And you will continue to hear them, because we just don't make excuses. Despite some of the anxiety from some of my other parts, we just don't make up excuses. Yeah, I did that. And yeah, it was not good. And it was wrong. And any continuation or variation of that. My main point here is that we often think about these types of things around Father's Day, Mother's Day, those types of specific holidays where you're supposed to honor thy mother and father, because as some of you know, religion was a big part of my childhood and was a major complication of my life. With this post, we just wanted to give a bit of background and discuss the absent present father, because he absolutely was there. Some of my memories of him are fantastic. He made, and you know, for those of you out there who struggle with certain holidays, for us, Halloween was one of the happiest times of our childhood. My dad was around. He was very present for Halloween. It's one of his favorite holidays. He liked the idea of dressing up, and he still does today. You know, he's almost 60 and he still dresses up for Halloween. He loves Halloween. It was always a fun time. My mother, with the push of my dad, is one of my personal beliefs, but she made a lot of our costumes when we were kids, and then my dad helped, and he helped us make all kinds of crazy cool costumes over the years, and it was just a very good and pleasant time in October. And then other times of year, I just have no memory of him even being there. And he talks about how he was there and he would know certain things, again, after he found our blog. But the main thing that he had said that, and again, I remember now because I've been years into therapy, he only found our blog last year. So one of the main things that I had remembered him talking about when we had a conversation, sort of, about that, was that he just can't deal with another thing right now. And beyond that, one thing that many of my relatives, but specifically my dad, has always said is that he doesn't worry about me. I'll be fine. And I think that while that is partially true, I'm also the one who developed DID. For those of you, again, who've been listening to the podcast for a while, you may have heard the episode we did on grief and DID, so where we did discuss some about my little brother and the fact that he was an addict, and that certainly played a part in his death. I think that that's part of the problem. Like, your kids are not okay. And whether you can or can't admit that to yourself doesn't make it any less true. And I think that's just part of the problem, because my dad talks about how he looks at the reality of situations, but he looks at a skewed version of the reality of situations. He looks at what he wants things to be, not what they actually are. And I think that that is, well, clearly very damaging, and my siblings and I are and were proof of that. So it's just something that we don't want to get into too much detail and be and have this be such a heavily depressing episode for people. However, I think it's important to talk about, so we'll leave it at that. Once again, this was Erica from the We and Me podcast. Thanks to everybody who's been listening and for your continued support. Don't forget that you can go to anchor.fm/the We and Me and click that support tab. $1, $5, or $10 a month. We really appreciate all of our supporters out there and everyone who's subscribed to the podcast. Wherever it is that you listen, thanks for all everyone who's out there subscribing and listening. We really appreciate you guys. So until next week, everyone, if you do struggle with relatives and all the ins and outs of familial relationships, know it can get better, and know that you yourself can now set boundaries in adulthood. It's tricky, it's hard, it makes for uncomfortable conversations, but you do what you gotta do. All right, everyone, talk to you later. The outlook wasn't brilliant for the Mudville Nine that day. The score stood 4-2 with but one inning more to play. And then when Cooney died at first and Barrows did the same, a sickly silence fell upon the patrons of the game. A straggling few got up to go in deep despair. The rest clung to that hope which springs eternal in the human breast. They thought if only Casey could get a whack at that. We'd put up even money now with Casey at the bat. But Flynn preceded Casey, as did also Jimmy Blake, and the former was a Lulu and the latter was a cake, so upon that stricken multitude grim melancholy sat, for there seemed but little chance of Casey's getting to the bat. But Flynn let drive a single to the wonderment of all, and Blake, the much despised, tore the cover off the ball, and when the dust had lifted and men saw what had occurred, there was Jimmy safe at second and Flynn a hugging third. Then, from 5,000 throats and more, there rose a lusty yell. It rumbled through the valley, it rattled in the dell. It knocked upon the mountain and recoiled upon the flat, for Casey, mighty Casey, was advancing to the bat. There was ease in Casey's manner as he stepped into his place. There was pride in Casey's bearing and a smile on Casey's face. And when, responding to the cheers, he lightly doffed his hat, no stranger in the crowd could doubt 'twas Casey at the bat. 10,000 eyes were on him as he rubbed his hands with dirt. 5,000 tongues applauded when he wiped them on his shirt. Then while the writhing pitcher ground the ball into his hip, defiance gleamed in Casey's eye. A sneer curled Casey's lip. And now the leather-covered sphere came hurling through the air, and Casey stood a-watching it in haughty grandeur there. Close by the sturdy batsman the ball unheeded sped. "That ain't my style," said Casey. "Strike one," the umpire said. From the benches black with people there went up a muffled roar, like the beating of the storm waves on a stern and distant shore. "Kill him! Kill the umpire!" shouted someone in the stand, and it's likely they'd have killed him had not Casey raised his hand. With a smile of Christian charity, great Casey's visage shone. He stilled the rising tumult. He bade the game go on. He signaled to the pitcher, and once more the spheroid flew. But Casey still ignored it, and the umpire said, "Strike two! Fraud!" cried the maddening thousands, and echo answered fraud. But one scornful look from Casey, and the audience was awed. They saw his face grow stern and cold, they saw his muscles strain, and they knew that Casey wouldn't let the ball go by again.
The sneer is gone from Casey's lip. His teeth are clenched in hate. He pounds with cruel violence his bat upon the plate. And now the pitcher holds the ball, and now he lets it go. And now the air is shattered by the force of Casey's blow. Oh, somewhere in this favored land the sun is shining bright. The band is playing somewhere, and somewhere hearts are light. And somewhere men are laughing, and somewhere children shout. But there is no joy in Mudville. Mighty Casey has struck out. Casey at the Bat by Ernest Lawrence Thayer.